A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Bobby Moore as a Jeff Hurst, the trailer booking at Billy Bones, a Paolo Di Canio. West Ham United, we celebrate our victories, we stick together in defeat. We're proud of our history, West Ham United, more than just a podcast. More than just a podcast.
Good afternoon. Good evening, good morning, welcome to More Than Just a Podcast. We are all linked by Sean this evening. We have myself, John. We have Sean in sunny, leafy Surrey.
Sean's bitten in Surrey, yes.
And we have Nigel Khan, the real Cockney, joining us this evening.
Where is he? Because he tries to make out he's in Newham or Canning Town. Come on, tell the truth. Where are you?
I'm in Essex. We've all moved out to the white flight. We've all bailed out. And
well, whereabouts in Essex? Well, I know you were at Southend yesterday.
Were you trying to track him down?
Yeah.
That was yesterday. Yeah. I'm back near London now.
Did you have some jelly deals?
I don't eat jelly deals, mate. They are absolutely disgusting.
I did get in a bit of trouble saying you must come from Surrey because for some reason when I put a picture up of the pie and mash, I put mash and pie. I put this is the mash and pie. Anyway, you are definitely from Surrey.
I don't think if anyone knows you, Sean, they will realise that you've done that your whole life. You've got something that doesn't quite link up properly.
Yeah. And of course we've got John in deepest dark to Surrey this evening as well. George tonight because he's got problems with the train, so he's coming back from London. He was due to join us, so we had no one else to invite, so we invited Nigel to stand in, and thanks very much, Nigel.
The last alternative, thanks.
Yeah, we thought you also actually have gone to some of the games, because I've got a confession. I've only just come back from Cornwall, deep ecstatic Cornwall, and I just didn't really, the internet's not great down there, so I sort of didn't see, no, I didn't see any of the whole game, if I'm honest, live. I just saw the highlights, and I turned off after probably the second goal on the Arsenal game. We've got three games since we last spoke, which you were on as well, Nigel. So I want to start off with you, Nigel, a little discussion on the whole game, which you lost 2-1. Just a little stat attack to begin with. Possession. West Ham enjoyed 54% of possession. The Hull, therefore, obviously had 46. West Ham had 12 shots, 4 on target. The Tigers had 7 shots, 3 on target. Nigel, discuss.
Game of 2 halves. We probably had the better of the first half. They brought on 2 subs in the second half. We didn't respond. They won the game.
Short and sweet. Anything to add, John?
No, it's pretty much it. Yeah, we just we couldn't deal with... They put like an attacking sort of substitutions on after the first half, and they went for it, and we couldn't deal with it. Defensively poor.
Yeah, I can't add much to it, except that I read a report that said, you know, we probably deserved a point, maybe, you know, that we should have drawn, really, and we were a bit unlucky to lose it.
I disagree.
I'm not sure about that. Yeah.
Well, look, the stats don't lie, guys. I know your stats
people.
Stats are
boring. You can manipulate stats anyway, you know.
We had the majority of the possession. We had 12 shots, 4 on target. They had a pitiful 7 with 3 on target. Game of 2 arse and all that, but maybe we needed a little bit more out of it. Anyway, let's move on to Arsenal. You went, I think, Nigel, didn't you? And met up with an old friend of ours, Paul Stringer, formerly the press officer at West Ham, and he was slumming it with the general public.
He actually came over and said hello to me. I didn't actually go and say hello to him, so he actually does really like me.
Have you been to the Emirates before?
Who, me?
Yeah.
Yeah, loads of times.
I think George and I went about 2 years ago. Last time we went, we've been a couple of times or 3 times. It's a bit soulless. It's more soulless than the London Stadium, in my view, but I know you'll probably have a different view. What was your match day experience like at the Emirates?
Funny enough, getting there was really easy. I've got the train at 6 o'clock from South Hockenden, and I was at the Emirates at 10 to 7. And bearing in mind, I went through Stratford. I thought, blimey, that's like quicker sometimes when I get to Stratford than the stadium when West Ham are playing. So, good start. Beer inside the grounds.
The beer and the food? You know it's the same people, Delaware North.
Food. I didn't eat the food.
The food and the beer are run by the same people as the London
point,
It's all the same. We are a model of Arsenal. So whatever you saw at Arsenal has been morphed and cloned into the London Stadium.
Arsenal for Kai, didn't it? So, you know, you walk around outside the Emirates Stadium and you see all silhouettes of their players. You walk around our stadium and you see all silhouettes of our players.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's only a matter of time until to start banging up statues outside the Olympic Stadium to West Ham fans. They seem to love a statue at Arsenal.
Yeah, they do. A lot of people, by the way, I apparently there was some kind of poll, and a lot of people still, just to put it in context, a lot of people still won't accept the Emirates 10 years on. They still don't accept the move, and I guess there's some parallels there, but you're never going to win everybody over, even though it was 10 years ago they moved from Highbury. I can't remember the actual year. They still don't accept their new home.
2006.
Was it 2006? Yeah, so 11 years ago.
Well, I would guess that is being backed up by the fact that it's also coincided with their worst run of success they've had for a long time as well. So.
Yeah, well, be careful what you wish for, because I don't know if you saw, but they had some kind of protest that marched, and then people turned up as a protest against the board. Of keeping on Wenger, and 10 people turned up for the march, and they said, well, that's more apathy of what goes on in modern football. Although I do say, on the game we played, they had another protest of not taking their seats to the 13th minute, and certainly watching the beginning on the stream, it seemed that a lot of people were missing at the beginning. Was that your view, Nigel?
Thousands must have stayed away then, because there were a lot of empty seats upstairs all through the game. The Emirates seems to suffer the same bugbear as us. They've sold the tickets and people ain't turning up. They probably weren't a protest. They just, you know, couldn't be bothered to go.
Modern football.
Yeah.
So just do a quick stat attack, because I know you like it. Obviously, West Ham lost 3-0. West Ham had only 34% of the possession. Obviously, the Gooners had 66%. West Ham had 7 shots, or 2 of them on target. The Gooners had 21 shots, 8 on target. So it was no surprise that they whacked us 3-0. What was your view? Was any positives to take on it whatsoever, Nigel, or just a complete embarrassment?
I've seen worse here, under Allardyce, to be fair. Not much, though. It was two teams that were very, very nervous for the first half. And then Arsenal, as soon as they got that one, they seemed to relax and they knew the others would follow. And it was almost as if we knew the others would follow, that as soon as they got that first, you know, we didn't crumble. We just didn't really seem to create anything.
And did you stay to the bitter end?
Believe it or not, for the first time ever, I went early.
Did you?
Yeah, I think on 82 minutes, 83 minutes back when the first goal went in.
You stayed longer than me when I was watching the streams. I had the ability to turn off when I wanted. John, did you watch the whole game from to the bitter end?
I did, but I didn't. You know, I left it on. I wasn't fully engaged with it after the third goal. I stopped really taking much notice of it when Sanchez and Ozil were doing little back flicks to each other and like basically just taking the piss. So I just thought this was just. I just couldn't watch it anymore, but I did leave it on till the end. Yeah, I did.
Did anyone stand out for you, John? I know Byron got a bit of a hard time, and Mascararo, you know, he got a bit of a hard time for poor defending. But was there anyone who deserved?
No. We seemed to hold our own for a while and keep with them. But like Nigel said, it's like as soon as they scored their goal, their confidence lifted, and we just couldn't cope with them all over basically. And again, it's toothless up front and. Not strong enough at the back, so no one really stood out for me.
Okay, well, probably not a lot to say. We were disheartened there, and everybody was saying, you know, West Ham could be relegation contenders. That was the talk after the Arsenal defeat. You know, the bookies had as short odds as 10-1 to go down. They didn't seem any way forward. We'd lost 5 league games on a trot. We'd been winless in 7 games. I talked to Nigel about previous manager that lost 5 in a row, and we worked at Aberyn Grant, Zola and Alan Pardew, wasn't it, Nigel, that had lost 5 in a row. Obviously, all of them had lost their jobs after losing 5 in a row.
You stated 6, didn't you? You said you'd been told by your senior sources, 6 was untenable.
Well, that's what they said in the past. In the past, David Sullivan has said, no one can survive 6 losses. I'm not saying my senior source is David Sullivan. I think you're mistaken. My senior source is with David Sullivan. This one was from David Sullivan, John. So Glady Gold said something really similar.
And probably Brady as well. She probably said something similar.
But before the game, we've been told by senior sources, funny enough this time, senior sources had said, but that wouldn't be the case for this, that if he'd lost the game, he wouldn't get the sack. And the reason is that there was literally no one else to take over. Everybody else is Slav's man. And I'm going to do something that probably will sound offensive to many people, but let's be honest. Julian Dix is there to put out the cones. And you know, he couldn't take over as manager, or am I being unfair?
How do you know that?
I'm just saying, it's my personal opinion. What does he do?
I mean, he gave someone a signed shirt the other day, renewing his season ticket first, so he obviously does a bit of media work.
But from a football perspective, Nigel...
I don't know, because we're not part of the coaching thing, so I wouldn't dare... I won't say a bad word about it, to be fair.
Okay. All right. Well, I won't go any further on that. But seriously, there was no one there to take over, so they were going to stick with him to the end of the season. They would never have Raheem Redknapp. Martinez also say he would never come back, Harry Redknapp. There's a lot more to that story that we couldn't go in for libel reasons. I spoke. I've got a call to speak to Jason Cundy and Andy Goldstein on Friday night about midnight about it. And I'd written a blog calling for the 12th man. And you know, there was a call to arms on blogs and on social media. And I repeated that on the radio of a call for the 12th man to get behind the team, get behind the manager, get behind the Clarence Hughes flag that was going up. And make sure...
So, hold on a minute. Hold on, stop there, please. We are no longer affiliated to Claret and Hugh. I know you are, but our podcast is no longer affiliated to Claret and Hugh.
Yes.
Make that clear. Thank you very much.
And the logo has changed. So, I know John's been giving me grief, but about the 12th man. But I believe, and we're going to talk about this a bit later, I believe that the crowd were more vocal and did get more behind the team. They were singing Super Slav, several times. That was before the goal went in, and when it was 1-0 before we'd won the game, which surprised me in some ways. The support Slav still retained with the match-going supporters.
It surprised me. I think that was a message to the owners. I think the fans singing Super Slav was telling the owners, you know, and your senior sources and all your other sources.
Yes.
But, you know, no matter what, he's our man and we believe in him.
Well, I did today, actually. He's got a 39% win record, which is better than Sam Allardyce, Gianfranco Zola and Avram Grant. Do you know what they've got?
Well, with Allardyce, is that including his championship season? Because obviously his win ratio there is better than anything. So.
Well, I don't think it does, because I can tell you now, Sam Allardyce's win record was 37%, so two below. Gianfranco Zola was 28%, or was that Avram Grant? And I think it was 31%. Avram Grant was 31%. So he's doing better on all of them. But we digress, because we haven't got round to talking about the momentous and historic win on Saturday when we played Swansea City. We beat the Welsh. All of us were there. It was a sunny day. Let's start with you this time, John. You turned up, I think, 2 minutes after kickoff. What did you think of the game?
I walked in at kickoff. I thought it was a very tense affair of two very average football teams. I thought our starting lineup confused me. I guess he was trying to get a tune out of IU against his old club, was what I guessed. But it was not a very good game. It was a good win. It was a good goal. Confused by substitutions. Didn't understand how Caleri gets in front of Sacco and Carroll. Can you assume they're more injured than we know?
They are. I've been told afterwards by senior sources that they were injured. And basically, they were on the bench almost as an insurance policy. But they were only going to get used if we went 1-0 down. So Carroll was still suffering from a groin strain. Sacco apparently is knackered after his half an hour and is not match fit. And therefore, they put him on the bench. Maybe it was psychological. But it was there. If we went 1-0 down, then we would have risked them. But because we were 1-0 up...
That doesn't make much sense, really. But there
I'm
you go.
I'm just telling you what the senior sources say.
It was not a brilliant game. It was a great win, much needed. I don't think we were particularly the 12th man. It's not much different.
You don't think there was a better atmosphere? I thought there was...
No,
I know you didn't sing, but I thought there was more singing. There was more singing.
I wasn't singing.
The Ginger Pele song. Did you not sing Ginger Pele song?
I was waiting for you to lead the 12th man, as it was our duty. As you told
I was singing a lot, and you just happened to take a picture of me when I was on the phone sitting down.
I took quite a good pictures of you sitting there on your phone.
One
your girlfriend.
Picture.
Your girlfriend sat next to you, sat down on her phone, and I just thought, well, that's not much of a 12th man job there.
Well, I was waiting for probably 89 minutes.
Trying to get them to sing.
So
you were talking to your senior sources, trying to get them to sing.
Did you sing England, 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 or God Save the Queen when we sang that?
Who, me?
Yeah.
I can't remember. I doubt if I would have done.
You didn't sing at all. You stood there with your son, looking pretty miserable, if you ask me. And I said, are you not entertained? You went, with this shit. With this shit, you said. I said, if I wanted to be entertained, I would not come here, Sean, is what you said to me. Did you not?
Yeah, I did.
Did enjoy yourself at the cow, though, before and afterwards.
Yes, I did. It was a good win, and that's about as good as I can say.
As a quick stat attack, West Ham had 46% of the possession, but the Swans had 54%. West Ham had 14 shots, 6 of them on target. The Swans had just 5 shots and 1 on target. So there you go. It was you know, the stats bear it out, that we were probably worthy winners, even we had to try grind it out. For me, the big man of the match was Ginger Pele. The way good old-fashioned defender clearing it right into the sort of upper stand, probably up to where Nigel sits, if he could kick that high, really saved us probably three or four times. And the way, I don't know if you saw, that he was bringing both his arms up and geeing up the 12th man, going, come on, come on, come on, get behind us. And I don't know if you've seen the video of him going afterwards. He fell to his knees, and you saw how much it meant to him at full time. He went running over, took his shirt off, jumped into the crowd, and gave his shirt to some young boy. And that showed me the passion that Ginger has and what he played to the badge and the team and the club and everything. And I wish we'd see more of that. And you know, we've missed Ginger, in my view. John, do you agree about my analogy of James Collins?
I think he had a very good game, yes, Sean. I agree.
How about Sam Byram then? Obviously, he sort of made up for his Arsenal woes, had a really good game, did some important blocks, and of course none important than blocking Sigurdsson right at the end, late in injury time. All the players went up to him, including Noble, and shook his head and celebrated like it was a goal. And apparently, I don't know if you saw earlier, he'd been limping and we thought he was going to come off. He left the London Stadium on crutches. So I thought he had a terrific game, terrific form, but it looks like he's going to be injured properly for Sunderland. And who knows how long he's going to be out. He does seem a bit injury prone, though. Did you rate his performance, Nigel?
He's done well. He's done well against one of the worst teams in the Premier League. So
let's be positive, Nigel. Who did you think had a good game?
I just said he did well. Is that not positive?
All right. Well, who else? Who else would you single out for a bit of praise?
Chiari.
Yeah.
Yeah. Noble. I thought done all right.
Yeah, Noble did all right.
But there was a bit of nervousness giving the ball away. We give it to them. They gave it to us. Two poor teams in the Premier League. Come on, you know, let's be honest about it. These are two poor teams in the Premier League. You know, the mad thing about it is, you know, after the game we were a point off 10th. You know, there we were, a lot of people worried about relegation, thinking we were going to go in down and about to commit suicide. And then all of a sudden we're only a point off 10th. So it's been a mad.
That's it, isn't it? It's mad. You know, we're now 66. By the way, I said we were 10-1. We're now 66-1 to the drop. How mad is that?
Well, that's what we needed. We needed, you know, one more win. If you look at it, it was important because even if we'd drawn that game, that would have been a good result because it still would have kept Swansea needing two more wins than what we get.
Agreed.
And that showed.
John, was there anyone that you thought was worthy of praise or you thought it was just a pretty average performance?
No, it was a high-pressure game and like you said, Chiari, Ginge, people like that, they delivered.
But I've got a question for both of you, right?
So I agree with Nigel. It is two poor teams in... I mean, we know it's not our best starting 11, but they're so poor. You look at the money these players are on compared to teams out of other leagues that are just so much better. The Premier League is so overrated.
Yeah. What did you think of AU, obviously, against his former team? Did he show any promise? He did a lot of running around, but beyond that?
Jordan doesn't good.
Sorry, what was that noise?
He looked better, didn't he? He did look better.
I think we bought the wrong brother.
Oh, you Jordan, are you? Yeah.
So he doesn't warrant this price tag, does he? Well,
he doesn't seem so at the moment.
No.
Big loss with Mikel Antonio as well, who, you know, having his hamstring went. And, of course, that brings us on to his replacement with Caleri. I mean, he did a lot of running around as well, and I think Noble praised him, but he should have got that goal, shouldn't he? He should have buried it, John.
No, he had a good chance. He's had a few of those with us, hasn't he? He doesn't seem like he cuts it, really.
I don't know why they persist with him, but you know, I don't know what's going on there. I don't understand. You know, when you got the likes of Fletcher that I thought Caleri is going back off alone at the end of the summer. You know, I'll tell you the story about Fletcher.
So West Ham had just about to agree out of court settlement with Man United for £1 million compensation, and of course, if they played Fletcher and had him do well or made lots of appearances, he would likely have got a far higher fee from either a tribunal or Man United would have want more. So I think there's something about, you know, the fee.
Well, you think they rolled in him back? You think West Ham rolled in him back? Do you?
My sources tell me that, yeah.
Whoa, I've seen three under 23 games.
Yeah.
Or Premier League two games. And I don't know, is there? Well,
yeah,
I see what he's not done it for me. And when you're playing against 18 to 20 year old defenders, and you're not cutting the mustard in a game like that, you know, then for me, he did not look like he was ready to go up against better class defenders in the Premier League. So, having seen him three times, I think I would send him out on loan next season.
Yeah.
That's
okay.
What I would think.
Worth £1 million?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do think it's worth £1 million. Yeah, I do think he's worth £1 million, to be fair to him. You know, he's a young player, and then hopefully he could be, you know, bloom into something a bit better. He's shown good touches. It's just, I don't know. Man United generally don't let bad players walk away, though, do they?
Well, true. But we'll see. You know, we remember Ravel Merrison and we spent £1 million on it.
Well, they were right with him, weren't they?
They were. And that's my point. Anything else to say on the historic Swansea win that put us on 36 points and 1 point away from 10th place?
It was historic.
It was
sunshine. That was nice.
Yes, the sun did shine. Although we're in the shade over in the West End, of course.
Didn't see so many stop-go signs when we walked back, did you?
Well, we went in a different way, didn't we? We walked to the town. We took a bit of a strange route.
I think we waited back a bit as well, didn't we? We waited the 15, 20 minutes for the barriers.
18 minutes, wasn't it? 18 minutes for the...
No, it was 18 minutes. Yeah.
Anyway, we should ask, sure. Let's hear what the gaffer had to say.
Well, Slaven, I thought you thoroughly deserved the win today, but you couldn't relax until the final whistle, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I congratulate the players, the fans, everybody. To be fair, that was today at the stadium. We deserve to win today. That's my opinion. We could have maybe killed the game before or make it easier for us. We had enough chances, but we didn't. But, I mean, it's ideal to win 1-0 against the opponent that is below us, 5 points, now it's 8, and then to keep a clean sheet and to do it with a proper togetherness and proper energetic performance from the home team, whole team, very matured, all the time together. That makes me really, really pleased.
It was a nervy first half, wasn't it? But a real moment of quality just at the end of the half.
That's what you need. I think we created a couple of chances before that we expected us to score. Then we did it. Then they had a good spell by slowing our rhythm, and they were with throwings around our box, a couple of corners and free kicks, and then we needed that kind of magic or touch of class and quality, and Sheku scored a brilliant goal, and it was a good time, of course, to go at the halftime with a little bit with a good result and with a good plan for a second half. It was crucial, but then in the second half we didn't drop. Okay, there's a bit of nervosity, you are losing, they are throwing the bodies up, strikers, wingers and all that, and then we knew that we're gonna that they're going to have their moments around their box, but we knew that we have to defend with numbers and good, but then we knew that we have to use that space behind that they were leaving open, and we were using that really good, apart from the final ball, from the shot or from the final touch. So we could have scored the second one, make it easier for us, but we didn't. But still, it's very good day for us. It's a good day for us.
You made three changes. You didn't bring on Andy Carroll and you didn't bring on Diafra Sakho. Are there still some fitness issues with those two?
Yeah, with Diafra is definitely. I mean, he was out for 3.5 months and his recovery and everything is going on really good for him to be part of two games in 3 days. It's basically a lot, although it wasn't a whole game, but we have to be very careful with him after 3.5 months of absence, and he means a lot to us, and we don't want to lose him again. With Eddie, it was a gamble, to be fair, nothing serious with his groins, but serious enough for him to basically, he shouldn't be in a squad today. But I asked him, Andy, can you at least be there, and I don't know, 10, 15 minutes. Mm. Because it didn't get worse after Arsenal game. So 10, 15 minutes if we need you. And of course, he's always going to say yes. And he said yes, so we kept him there in case if it was 1-1, if it was 0-0, he would have come on. Probably, yeah. Or most definitely. But we didn't have to put him on.
It is a really
also because all three players who came from the bench, they done really good for us. They stabilised us or even improved our performance.
What do you think about that then, John?
I reckon it's just the same old stuff, Sean. I think he's starting to just repeat himself.
You say that every week now.
Do I? No, I'm saying the same old stuff because I never listened to it.
Yeah. So next on our running order, I've touched on this earlier, but the 12th man, lots of people, Noble and Slav said, best atmosphere this season. From a player's perspective, from a manager's perspective, Slav looked over when they were singing Super Slav and raised his hand up in acknowledgement, which he usually doesn't do. They said it was the best atmosphere all season. I'm going to start with you, Nigel, in the upper gods. What was the atmosphere like from where you were?
It's almost as if the media department are feeding them the lines and they're just spitting them out. It was good. You know, yes, we got behind the team the way we always have done. I wouldn't say it was the...
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Best atmosphere of the season, by far. I mean, you look at the Chelsea game, I suppose, in the cup. We've not had that
and,
much.
And the Palace game. I would put it
the Palace game.
By the Chelsea game and the Palace game.
Yeah, you know, to be fair, the funny enough, probably the best... I remember it for a league game would be the opening 25-30 minutes of the Watford game.
Oh, really?
Well, okay. We went 2-0 up and we were buzzing, you know.
Yeah.
And then, then you all collapse, and it seems like that sums up our team.
And there was some fighting and some walking.
And, you know, we lost 4-2 and everything just seemed to go downhill. But the atmosphere, I thought, you know, when you got the, what do you reckon, there's about 45,000 there on Saturday. You know, you're going to get a noise out of 45,000 people. The one good thing about the stadium is the roof does hold it in. So it is going to make a noise, but it ain't...
Slavs thinks there's 60,000, because every quote they keep on saying is 60,000 people.
Strong, shut up.
I'm just saying what Slav says. We know it's 57.
Well, we know they only get 57,000 anyway.
Well, it's not really 57, because there's still... I mean, even... I thought the stadium was fuller, but actually George and John pointed out that the sun was just actually optical illusion, and when the shade came down you could see all the empty seats again. There was probably, you know, a good 3,000 or 4,000 people missing from the game.
Being generous, there was 45,000 to 47,000 there.
There's not. For that to be true, there would have to be 10,000 people missing. I'd expect 50,000 and 7,000 missing.
Right, Sean,
real push.
You've done this. You've actually done this. You've actually had figures for previous games, and it was the same right amount. It was in the 45, 47.
Like Arsenal, it was like 53.
Okay. You're going to get Arsenal because it's a London derby. Look at the Middlesbrough game. You've got figures
47,
for the Middlesbrough game.
47.
There you go.
There you go.
And that weren't the fact
was
5 defeats.
Well, no, I mean, but that was, at the time, I don't think Ticket Trader was working and the Middlesbrough game. So those early games, I'm not arguing with you. I think there are lots of people.
You are.
But you know my point. People should actually sell their tickets on Ticket Trader. I sold mine to child tickets on the Saturday for £2.85 each. I didn't do that.
I could have got you more than that.
Well, it was 30 seconds of my life to put them up. And do you know what? They went in minutes because they're in block 113, right at the front. People like it. They go in minutes. It's not about the money. I only paid 99 quid for those tickets. When my children aren't using them, I want other fans to use them. And I think it's our moral duty to put our seats on Ticket Trader when we're not using them.
You do what you think's best, Sean.
I don't know. Nigel disagrees on this. Anyway, so John, what did you think of the atmosphere? I know the answer to this because you thought it was pretty dire.
Well, I didn't say it was dire. I said it wasn't any different than what I've experienced there before. I agree. I mean, in my memory of it, the Palace game was the best atmosphere I've enjoyed there. When after the Carroll goal and all that, it was really rocking.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the best it's been there. But it's just very few and far between, isn't it, them atmospheres? It does relate to what you see on the pitch, obviously. And the away fans.
I'm talking to two people who never wanted to go to the London Stadium. And you know, most miserable, pessimistic buggers, to be honest, that you can find in the West Ham community.
Well, yeah, okay. So if that's the case, then what is the best atmosphere, Sean? Is that the best atmosphere it's been?
No,
let me ask you.
Let
me ask you a question. That was a must-win game on Saturday.
It was.
We were coming on the back of 5 defeats. Would you have been more confident of us winning that game in the Bolin, or would you have thought at the London Stadium?
Oh, without a doubt, in the Bolin. Yeah. I would have, absolutely. But you know what? We've moved, John. We've moved on. We've changed. And that first season, you know, has been difficult. And I know you're giving me a bit of grief for what I said on TalkSport about, you know, everybody's an expert, everybody's a football manager and a tactics, and everybody's a recruitment expert. And everyone's a stadium architect and know what's best for the thing. But we overanalyze and overcriticize everything to do with West Ham. Unless, you know, John Lyle didn't have this, did he? Ron Greenwood didn't have this. You know, people tweeting and trolls, poisonous, going this, and this. If you didn't like
yourself
it, don't
down,
know. That's how you lot make a living, Sean.
I know. Don't bite the hand that feeds you, John.
But it's just the bottom line is that people like me,
don't agree with the person that's out there saying that this is the best thing we could have done. The board are our saviours. That's one thing that really gets my goat. And they're going to take us to the next level, or whatever that is. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't agree with it.
Talking about social media, I got in a bit of trouble on Saturday for spreading fake news. So a steward in our block, and I think you were there, told us 100 stewards didn't turn up, and because it was a sunny day and they'd been fined between £30 and £60, and I tweeted this out, and it was retweeted over 300 times. So I spoke to a director at London Stadium 185, and also bumped into the chief operating officer and said, well, you know, what's going on? They said, we'll look into it. So later on after the game, they said, well, I don't know what your steward was on, but, you know, 20 stewards didn't turn up for one company, but 20 more turned up from another company, and we met our quota. Well, I misread that and said, I put a retraction out and said, so 40 didn't turn up. And they wrote to me again and said, you didn't read it properly. So, I will like to officially make a confirmation now and a correction. There was a full quota of stewards at the London Stadium on Saturday. I was wrong to tweet out the fake news, and I will be more careful.
Fake news? How can you actually class that as news? Who's interested?
But was it just lucky then that the extra 20 turned up? Was that like...
It was a bit fortunate, wasn't it?
Amazing. if only I was so cynical.
One thing before I move on about Robbie Savage I've got a piece going up tonight that might cause a bit of problems, but Newham Council today refused me for the third time to tell me, Nigel, who gets these free tickets, who they've gone out to, how many they've given out. And I particularly asked the question in Freedom of Information about Sir Robin Wales, who we both saw on the Chelsea game in the Royal East Lounge.
Yeah.
I asked how many councillors had used the hospitality this season, and senior management like the CEO, and how many free tickets have been given out to employees. They rejected my request today, Nigel, and said that it was too premature to release that information.
Right.
I sense a little cover-up there. What do you think?
Well, you know what I thought, because I had a little rant when I walked in to see the mayor of Newham and the chief executive of Newham obnobbing it with an actor who was their guest. You know,
Robin Wales didn't put it on his hospitality. Funny enough, he did put hospitality. He was invited by Karen Brady and Angus Kinnear, who is the MD of West Ham, to a private members club. Yeah, where they went to a private members club in West London called the Art Club for lunch. And all he put down is, well, it was more than £25. So being wined and dined by the West Ham board. But when he goes out, let's be honest, we won't be libelous, but they were having a good time, weren't they?
They were. They were availing themselves of the fare.
Of the full hospitality.
Offer. Yes.
That is not been declared whatsoever. And I think, you know, I know Sir Robin Wales is a West Ham fan, but as
from
a public
Scotland.
Official...
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. As a public official who is the mayor of Newham and a part owner of the stadium, I think he should tell his elected voters exactly what he gets, including any hospitality he gets at the stadium.
So there's what, 5-6 games left of the season?
Yeah.
So I think by the end of the season, that's no longer premature to get that information from them. So I think you should persist.
I've appealed it once already. It got rejected. I'm taking it to the Information Commissioner's office to appeal it.
When you look at how they pushed us into that stadium as well, Newham Council, with some of the stuff that they come out with, you know, that's what got my goat. When I walked in there to see him with his bottle of beer and Inspector Lewis off the TV, knobbing it. You know, with directors of West Ham United as well, who were sitting at the table,
they were at a different table. I want to just put on record, the West Ham directors were on
the table. No, one of them did sit down with them.
Yeah, only say hello, but they weren't guests of West Ham. Ham was a different.
All right, well, whatever. You know, they were having a jolly good time in the Royal East.
Well, I'll tell you another thing. Another one got rejected today. London Legacy Development Corporation, who are the other owners of the stadium, they with the London Mayor have employed a company, an auditing company called Moore Stevens, to do this infamous investigation, what went wrong and everything else. I asked where they've been used before, how much money they've been paid in the past, how much they've been involved in the London Stadium construction and project management, what audits and links to any audits. And do you know what they said?
None of your business.
Well, they did, yeah. They said they need another 20 days because there's a public interest test that they don't know whether they want to release this information. That's shocking. They're carrying out an independent investigation into stadium, and they've employed a company that was involved in the construction and helped audit and give a green light to the whole thing. It's nepotism.
Well, it's not independent, is it?
Was this on your running order, Sean?
It's not. You're right. It's not a London Stadium podcast. Let's get back. Robbie Savage, questions.
started with Robbie Savage and ended
Robbie Savage questioned about the recruitment policy. You know, he obviously knew both Sullivan Gold from his Birmingham days. He asked, who is in charge of the recruitment policy? Who makes the decisions? I'm going to start with you, Nigel. What's your view? Who's making the decisions on the recruitment? Because it seems to be many fans believe Slav's not involved and they're picked by the board.
I reckon it is probably four of them sit down. So,
who's the fourth?
Sullivan.
Who's the fourth?
Well, I'd go probably Sullivan. Is it Tony Henry? His mate. Who does his spying or scouting? Maybe Terry Wesley, chief of scouting or coaching, and Slav with his team probably sit down. They'll go through. I think Sullivan has his picks rightly or wrongly. You know, I mean, me, it's a team game, and the team takes the blame if it goes wrong. Every Premier League signing we make. Technically, it's a gamble. Some world-class players have come to the Premier League and failed, like Baron, you know, one off the top of my head, Shevchenko. So there's no sure and easy way. You know, A, you could have come to us, and, you know, fresh in the mind, you think was the hat-trick in the Swansea game at the Bowling in May that he scored. So you think 20 million was a lot. It was done because the TV money's made it mad, though, isn't it?
Yeah, at the
end of the day. So the fees, the stick you can beat the board with is the fact that they came out and said world-class players will be attracted by the stadium. We will be signing, you know, 20 goals thing. Let's spend
£30 million.
£25 million. Don't even get you
technically
into
a top 10
team.
Keep your mouth shut. Don't talk about a 20-goal striker. Don't talk about £30 million quid. Don't talk about the next level. Don't talk about politics.
So,
all of them.
Anyway, let's get back to recruitment policy. John, who do you think? You've often poo-pooed my suggestion of how it works, which I'll say in a minute from my sources. But how do you think it works?
You don't think
Slav should take the blame for the signings, in your view?
No, I think that Sullivan, with his preferred agent, are out in the market, and I think they bring to the table a list of players that are available. And I think that Slav and him and the Sullivan and the agent, and like say Wesley or whoever it is, Henry, they all sit together and they sort of decide from a list that's brought to the table. And I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, Bilic says, well, I would like so-and-so who I've heard is available, but I would say the majority is done that way. And you say about, you know, 20 million for Ayew and that, but you look at Zaza, he's scored half a dozen goals, he's just gone for 13.5
million. Yeah, he's just gone to Valencia.
So, you know, there's things out there, and I don't feel the need
for the 30, 40 million pound player. I would just like a bit, something that looks like a proper plan, a bit more professionalism about it, and just for them to, like, you know, produce players that we need in the right positions. Instead of a scattergun 12, 14 players in, let's get four or five decent players for the right positions that we need to fill.
Yeah, and I agree with you. My understanding of the recruitment policy is, and I think you're very close, Terry Wesley doesn't get involved, is my understanding. Three people in a room. Tony Henry, head of scouting, right, who obviously has got a lot of contacts. He comes with his list. A number of agents approach Sullivan, and he comes with a list on who's available. Yeah, and Slav comes with his own list. And they go through the list one by one, either crossing out names or underlying them for future, you know, more negotiation. But my understanding is both Slav and Sullivan have a right of veto for either one. So if there's one that Sullivan goes, no, I'm absolutely not having him, he can veto him. But more importantly, Slav has complete right of veto of any player that Sullivan or Tony Henry puts forward.
Well, I would accept that if I knew that your sources were one of them, Slav and Bilic, because your sources are so one-sided.
I know someone very close to Slav and Bilic who has confirmed, although we got it from another source, who's confirmed that that's basically it.
But is that right that Sullivan can do that? So you tell me.
What, that he can veto when he's paying the money?
Bear in mind that it's Bilic that gets sacked. Sullivan will sack Bilic at the end of the day at some point. Whenever a football manager is appointed, they know they're going to get sacked at some point. So, you know, what other club owner does that?
But do you know what? They even call it now in press releases. Right? This could never happen in Allardyce's days. But
no.
David Sullivan sees himself as director of football. And that term has even crept into official press releases.
Yeah, well, they undermine him. They undermine him on every corner, every part of it, the whole thing.
Well, do you know what
has he achieved in 20-odd years of football? In all honesty, come on, if that's the case, show me the players at Birmingham City that were top-notch, what they've done. Show me the players at West Ham that Sullivan's done. It ain't right. It ain't.
You can see the players that he has brought in that are absolutely shocking. You can see the gambles.
Yeah, well, let's move on to the last question we're going to ask, which is, you know, when I spoke to you last week before the game, or after we lost five on the trot, John, you seemed to have enough of Slav. I've been criticised by...
Did I say that?
Ian Dale called me out on the last podcast as saying, well, you said, you know, Slav should go. And do you know what? I have still grave concerns about Slav, which I'll talk about in a minute. But I'm going to ask you, I'm going to start with you, John. Should Slav stay on next season is my first question. My second part of the question is, should he be offered a new extension to his contract? So if you can answer those two questions and give any background to your answer.
I think you'll find that my comment last time was stick with him and stop undermining him. And back him.
I understand that, but we're not talking this season. We're talking next season. He goes for his hip replacement. Next season, let me put the moral dilemma. Let's throw it in as a third part of the question. Rafa Benitez is available and he wants to come to West Ham in the summer, despite getting Newcastle up. Do you stick? Do you swap? What do you do?
I think that teams notoriously suffer when they have a move. I think we've suffered with that. I think he's had a terrible injury list and the transfers have been shocking. So I think everything's gone against him and he's got us to survive this season. I question some of the tactics. I question some of the things that he does. But given what we've had in the past, I would stick with him.
Right, well, let's go on to the original two questions. You want him to manage us next season? Yes?
Yes.
You want them to give him an extension in the summer for another 2 years?
Yep.
So for him, for you, long-term, he's our man. Let's stick with him.
Say long-term, who's ever long-term?
Well, all right, we should offer him another 2-year contract on top of his year, so another 3 years.
I would give him at least another season, because he gave us our best season we've had forever, well, for modern history last season.
We've
had a shocker this season for a number of reasons. Let's give him another go.
Okay.
Why keep changing it?
Okay, Nigel, lover of Sam Allardyce. same two questions to you, or three questions. Should Salah stay on next season? Should he be offered another 2-year extension to make it 3-year? Or should we swap if someone like Rafa Benitez or Mancini was available?
Yes to next year, definitely. 100%. I would give him definitely a new contract, not 2 or 3 or 5 year contract. Get a bit of stability in, and I wouldn't touch Mancini or Benitez with a barge pole personally.
How about Eddie Howe? If he was available, Eddie Howe.
I like Eddie Howe, yes, but I wouldn't want, whilst Slaven's there and doing as good a job as he's doing, even this season, you know, I'd caveat that as well. The fact is that if we'd have gone down this season, if you was a championship team next season and Slaven Bilic was available to manage that championship team, would they jump at the chance? Well, yes, they would. So I can't see why, when you've got a manager like that that gets you relegated, that you would then naturally sack him. Bearing in mind that when they were at Birmingham, Steve Bruce got relegated and they gave Bruce a chance to bring them back up. So why do we have to keep going through this 2-year, 3-year cycle of managers? You get nothing. In the situation we're in, you get nothing for chopping and changing your manager. If you want to build the club, especially the turmoil that we're going through with the move, because believe it or not, it has really affected the fans. There's a big split, and Bilic is still a link to old West Ham.
And he
does, and that's why I think he carries a lot of support, the emotion. He's bought into the club as a player. Yes, he did dirty in a way and go into Everton, but he did stay till the end of the season, though, didn't he? He didn't walk out in March. When
he was injured anyway, but that's another story.
Well, you say, you know, at the end of the day, he played on, though. He was still there.
Yeah.
So therefore, he played with an injury because he wanted to do right. You can see by the emotion, some of the interviews he gave last season, he knows his club. He gets us as well, I think, as fans. So why we'd want to bring in, you know, mercenary managers that we know would only come for the wages? Why would Benitez or Mancini come here? Seriously.
Well, I don't know. And I'm not saying Mancini is the right man, but I the jury's still out for me. And I'm a bit undecided. I know it's awful to sit on the fence. And I'm not just saying get rid of Slav. But I do remember, I've got a long memory and not just remember the last game. No, he's a really nice guy, Slav. And he's very passionate and the fans love him and everything. But I can't forget, you know, some of his transfer signings that was his. And I question his transfer now and saying, you know, can he pick a good player?
Didn't he insist on Payet when he came over? Wasn't that him?
Well, certainly Payet wasn't initiated for him. He didn't say no to him. But I don't think
he's been in public saying that he wanted him.
He's a very stubborn man. You know, once you've wronged him, you know, Abalo, they had a falling out. He never played again. He fell out with Saka.
But ain't that what you want in a manager? And
he fell out with Saka.
Well,
all right. The stubborn bit I really, really have a problem with is consistently playing Mikel Antonio as a right back. And everyone was shouting to him, don't play him as a right back. Playing people out of position. Some of his bizarre tactics, some of his bizarre substitutions.
Do you ever watch City, Sean?
Yeah, occasionally.
Do you ever watch Man City? He plays them out all over the place, half his players in wrong positions. Managers will do that. It takes a good manager to see it's wrong and then do something about it.
Has he got the experience? This is his second season. And I just worry, and
this is going to be a big experience for him this season, isn't it?
Right.
And
well,
don't talk about Ranieri. I heard on the radio the other morning that they've been talking to Ranieri.
Yeah.
I mean, if they get Ranieri in, that is just hilarious.
Yeah. Well, Ranieri, I believe, is on a list of possibles.
But how can I have a list of possibles? We've got.
Well, we always have to be prepared. You have to be prepared if he walks, you know? You always have to be prepared. Anyway, let me finish my point. My point is, I'm still undecided. Do I think he will go in the summer? Probably not, because I don't know who's available, right? But I think if he doesn't get a good start to the season, I think he'll be gone at Christmas. If he doesn't get a flying start, I think they will give him half a season, right? And if he hasn't got a flying start to next season, we're in a, you know, we're down towards the bottom in a relegation scrap, I think they will say enough's enough, and they will have another manager lined up. But then again, if they think they can get a better manager, and their words, not mine, they want a manager to take them to the next level. I'm
what
not
is
sure.
The next level?
Well, I top six, maybe. I don't know. What is it? Top six.
It's a manager. The whole thing is relative.
All right, let me ask you the question. Can Slaven Bilic get us into the top six, you guys? John?
Not at the moment.
Could Jose Mourinho get us into the top six?
You look at the money that that teams like Tottenham have got, who are there. You look at Everton now, it's backed by a multi-millionaire. But they're spending money, they're backing players. Our board don't do it. Our board are doing it on the cheap. They're trying to do it, everything, on the cheap. It's all relative. So they will get us to a position that they deserve, which will suit them until they cash in one day.
Anyway, we're probably going to have to agree to disagree, guys, because I'm never going to win with you two guys on this subject, because we would just say one thing versus the other all day long whenever.
Because you're in fairyland, though, aren't you?
It's called Thames Ditton, not fairyland.
Well, when you say, we can be top six, we ain't ever going to be. We ain't ever. How much money are we going to need to do that? And that's why I always question
whether
Mancini ever turn up. Where's the money coming from?
I think we've got a bigger turnover than Everton. I think we can outperform Everton if we've got the right players. So you
Everton
can get
are backed by
seventh then.
Right, so then you say on.
Everton's got a new owner who's a multi-millionaire who's financially, but he's come out and said he's going to financially back the club.
I think Spurs will have a problem funding themselves as they try. It will cripple them financially to fund their new stadium. And they will, like Arsenal, have some wilderness years. I know they're second at the moment. They've done really well. But I think they will have some wilderness years in the next 3 to 4 years as they try and it cripples them to fund this stadium.
I disagree.
And we've got an opportunity. Well, that's what it's all about, opinions. Anyway, we're running out of time now, guys. We're playing Sunderland away, who look definite for the drop. So I'm looking for your prediction on Sunderland away and also your final league position and points total for this season. So start with you, John.
Sunderland away. They probably haven't won for a while, have they?
They're odds on favourite, like 1-80 for the drop or something.
West Ham rolling in, it's always a good chance. I reckon it'll be a draw.
Yeah, we're on 36 points. Where do you think we're in? We've got Sunderland, we've got Hull, we've got Everton,
we've got Stoke,
Spurs,
we've got Everton, Spurs, Stoke, Liverpool,
Burnley.
I reckon we'll end up on 40 points.
Okay. What position?
I don't know where that'll put us. No idea. But we'll be safe on our 40 points. We've got that'll be another 4 points from where we are now.
Okay. All right. Nigel.
I think we'll beat Sunderland. I think everybody's. I think we'll get 41 points. We'll get another couple of draws after that. And then I reckon that'll stick us about. It's a bit of a funny old season. It's those 14th and 15th around there.
I'm going to go 43 points. I think 2 wins and a draw. I think we'll beat Sunderland.
Yeah.
Right. 2-0 this weekend. I think we'll beat Burnley.
Burnley won 12 games at home.
I'm just telling you. And I think we draw against Stoke. And we get beat against Spurs.
Everton, Spurs,
Probably get beat against Everton, probably get beat against Liverpool.
Lose all their own games then.
Huh? Yeah.
Lose all their own games.
Fortress London Stadium.
Nigel Khan, thanks for being our stand on More Than Just a Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you, John, for bearing with us tonight. It's good night from me, Sean. It's good night. John has been...
Yeah, I've been here. Thank you very much.
Nigel has been...
cynical.
Come on, you Irons!
Come on, you Irons.
Up the other.
Bye.
It's a wrap, guys.
I'm going to go and have some dinner. I'll see you later.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.